At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hello and welcome to the Full of Beans podcast, hosted by myself, Hannah Hickenbotham. Throughout these podcast episodes, we will speak to a range of individuals about their experience of eating disorders, with the aim of increasing awareness and understanding whilst reducing stigma and isolation. Please note that the topics discussed in this podcast may be triggering for some individuals, so tread lightly, check in with yourself, and reflect on these conversations. Today I'm joined by Courtney McLean. Courtney is a PhD candidate at Monash University, where they are conducting research to determine the association between veganism, vegetarianism, and eating disorders. Courtney is also developing a validated novel eating disorder tool for these groups, which we will discuss today. Hello, Courtney.
Hello, thank you so much for having me.
It's so nice to have you. I am super excited to speak to you today. And I just love the fact that literally, like, I put a thing on Twitter, like, anyone want to come on the podcast? And then your colleague was like, yeah, I do. And all of, like, these people that I know at Monash want to come as well. And it's just so nice that I've been able to reach people, like, literally the other side of the world.
Yeah. Well, we're absolutely happy to support and be a part.
Yeah, no, it's really cool. So very excited to speak to you about your PhD. So where did that idea come from? What were your motivations for looking at veganism and vegetarian and the link to eating disorders?
Yeah, it's quite a funny story, actually. Mm-hmm. I turned vegetarian when I first started university, and then I went on to do my honours after undergrad looking at eating disorders. And at around about that same time, I also decided to be vegan myself. Mm-hmm. And then I came towards the end of my fourth year, so my honours year, and I decided that the research pathway was definitely for me. I loved researching eating disorders. It was a true passion of mine. And then kind of the side identity as a vegan was also, I was quite passionate about that. Mm-hmm. And I joined a number of, like, vegan Facebook groups, like vegans in Australia or Melbourne, or there's honestly so many out there. And I came across a post from someone who was posting about their personal eating disorder experience online on this kind of public forum about how they, in order to get treatment for their eating disorder, they were being required to eat meat again. Mm-hmm. And as someone who had kind of no exposure to that side of the eating disorder field, and as a vegan myself, that was really quite shocking to me. And for a lot of people on the post, that was truly shocking. I think that's kind of one of the worst things that I guess a vegan can kind of think of is being made to eat meat in order to get recovery. And that person was saying, I don't want to get treatment if this is the only pathway for me. And there was lots of discussion on this post, a lot of people saying, well, you know, veganism is about doing what's practical, what's, you know, reasonable within the realms of what you've got at the moment. It's a philosophy. It's not kind of like a strict like there's no kind of rules. So it was kind of a toy up between a lot of these different comments. And so I went and searched for literature, kind of with my research hat on at that point, to see where kind of the eating disorder field sat on this topic. And there was not a lot of actual published literature out there. There was a lot of kind of discussions around, you know, anecdotally seeing a lot of vegetarian and vegan people in treatment and that type of thing. But the research really just wasn't there. And that's when, I wanted to go kind of full throttle into that topic and find a supervisor who would support me in researching this topic further.
Yeah, and I think it is such an interesting concept. And like when you came and told me about the PhD that you were doing, I was like thinking in my head about where I stand on it. Because when I did my master's, we had a lecture also on like veganism and vegetarianism and eating disorder recovery. And I think it's an interesting one. And it almost in my mind, originally what the lecturer said to me was like, it's all about when someone became vegan or vegetarian. So, if they became vegan or vegetarian, they've done it all of their life, or like they did it way before their eating disorder, then you can potentially say, that's okay. But if somebody did it during their eating disorder, that's not. But for me, that didn't feel like a good enough answer, because in separate to an eating disorder, you are still living your life, and things could crop up in your life, and you think, yeah, actually, I want to go vegan or vegetarian. And I think it actually is more about the intentions behind it. But then it's so hard because an
To
eating
pull it
disorder is
apart.
so manipulative, and really under like picking out those intentions as to why you're actually going vegan or vegetarian is like so incredibly hard.
Exactly. I don't think it yeah, there's so many different factors to consider. To consider then, onset is a really, really great one to look at. Did they start to adhere to a vegetarian or vegan diet at the onset of their eating disorder behaviors, or did kind of the vegetarian veganism thing come 10 years or 5 years beforehand? That's a good indication, but also intent and kind of motivations. Are they doing it for animal welfare concerns, or are they doing it because they've heard that veganism is a really great way to lose weight? And there is that kind of narrative online. I mean, if you do a Google, there's kind of those types of catchy media headlines that talk about veganism in that way.
Yeah, I think it's the same with any sort of alteration to your diet. Is like the first thing that comes up is weight loss. Like, stupidly, I found this so stupid at the beginning, it's completely irrelevant, but one of my friends, her partner is doing a PhD on like the stability of peptides, and one of them that he's looking at is GLP-1. And I was like, oh, I remember that from my biomed days. What was it? And I googled it, and it was like weight loss, weight loss, weight loss, and it's used for diabetes. But I was just like, no, like this is not fun. But yeah, anyway, getting back to the relevant point. Yeah, I think that there is a big driver for weight loss, and I think my sort of thing, I guess, with going vegan and going vegetarian when you're going through an eating disorder is, one, it's very easy to be in situations where you're like, oh, I can't eat that because like I'm vegan or vegetarian. But also it kind of amplifies that restrictive mindset. And if you're not in the right place, it's very easy to kind of, have all those rules and that rigidity, and really not, like we've said, be able to separate that from the eating disorder. So when you've been, obviously we'll talk about the pros and stuff of being vegan and vegetarian as well, but I'd like to kind of explore the whole thing. Have you kind of seen anything about maybe the potential damages that being vegan or vegetarian can have in recovery, and or maybe the links that they might have to disordered eating?
Yeah, so I guess with a vegetarian and vegan diet, there's a degree of restriction that's just naturally required just due to the nature of the diet. You have to be looking at ingredients lists and nutritional labels. You have to be kind of spending that extra time at the supermarket reading through packages and stuff like that. And that's just something that's a part of the diet. And also, when you go out for food, or when you visit a family member, or you're at a work function, it is something that is generally part of the conversation in terms of finding out whether you can eat something at that event. So yeah, there is a very high level of cognitive restraint required, but also cognitive restraint is a part of eating disorders and eating disorder cognitions and stuff like that. So that's kind of where the overlap is seen in the literature and clinically. And I guess another part of that is that eating disorders love having like a vehicle to kind of let drive them to get them to where they want to be. And sometimes veganism and vegetarianism is just that. It does allow for a kind of socially acceptable way to potentially camouflage disordered eating. And also at times vegetarianism, veganism can be kind of like celebrated as well between kind of family members and stuff like that. So there's lots of different parts to how they fit into each other.
That was the thing that I was going to say is I think being vegan and vegetarian, particularly vegan in society, is almost a very noble, it's like, wow, like, you know, it's amazing that you
can
do
that. That must be hard,
I don't have the self-control or whatever to not eat chocolate.
I love cheese too much,
like And I feel like if you're, you know, engaging in eating disorder behaviours, and that's the main driver as to why you're engaging in a vegan diet, then, you know, it is that sort of glorification of the behaviours that kind of, you know, you are able to have that self-control and stuff. And like you said, it makes it kind of socially acceptable to then engage in those behaviours. So I can imagine that dynamic of when people are giving you those comments is very difficult. And I think also another thing that would be very difficult in a recovery place is, and this is something that I found myself because I'm vegetarian, and I went vegetarian about 3 years ago, and it was purely because of the fact that I was away and I was away somewhere for Christmas, and they'd got a whole pig, and this whole pig had been out for about a week and we were still expected to eat it, and I was like, I'm going vegetarian, and then I just stuck with it, and I was like, no thank you. But now I think you know, I have in my own recovery been like, what's the sort of drivers for it? But part of the reason I don't want to start eating meat is for people to be like, oh, you were vegetarian, like, why are they starting eating? Even though they're meat eaters themselves, they still kind of like think that it's acceptable for them to look down on me because I've started eating meat again.
I think there's a lot of expectations that when you do go vegetarian or vegan that you may stay that way, and for a lot of people that may not be the case. No, they may, veganism or vegetarian may have served them a purpose in their life at that particular time, and that is absolutely fine. I also think about particularly veganism, it doesn't require a few people to do something really perfect. It requires kind of a lot of people doing the best they can, and a lot of people, you know, if it is for animal cruelty reasons, a lot of people cutting down here or there on their meat intake or something like that. So it's really not about being this perfect vegetarian or vegan. I definitely think that could tie into the eating disorder thing in terms of having some the flexibility within a vegetarian and vegan diet. That's definitely something that can be explored, whether they're still being super rigid within the realms of that vegetarian and vegan diet.
Yeah, and that was just something that came to my mind actually as well, and that nowadays, you know, in the society that we live in, we have, I don't know whether it's the same in Australia, but particularly in the UK, we don't really think there's a single food, maybe apart from like eggs, that you can't get a vegan alternative for. You know, we have got so many different types of meat replacements. We've got all the different types of cheeses you could possibly wish for, yogurts, everything. So I think if somebody is engaging nowadays in vegan, vegetarian diet, and, you know, they go to a social event and somebody's got, you know, if we're thinking about foods that maybe someone might find difficult, got all those foods out, and then they're not having those, I think that would be a sign of, I think maybe you're doing this for the wrong reasons. Whereas I think back in the day, it might have been, you know, you go to a social event and all you can have is kind of some boiled potatoes.
Yeah, it was a bit easier to get away with a side salad and stuff like that. But I think with the popularization of veganism and vegetarianism, particularly in the last 5 to 10 years, with all of the mock products It is super easy to get so many alternatives, and really good alternatives as well.
Yeah. Genuinely, like a lot of them, I like all of the cheeses I prefer. Some of them are so good, like some of the ice creams, I'm like, damn, why are people not just eating this anyway? It's so much nicer.
Yeah. Well, the UK and Australia are known to be two of the best.
Oh, really?
Vegan countries in terms of acceptability and restaurants, uh-huh. Particularly London is amazing.
For absolutely. Yeah, I always find now if I go out for food, I'm like, okay, we're not going to like a normal restaurant and I'll have the vegan option. We're going to a vegan place because they'll actually do nice food rather than like putting a mushroom in a bun and calling it a burger. So you mentioned earlier about vegans being asked to eat meat and that was the only way for them to access treatment. And I saw that in your research you'd done some writing about how introducing meat and animal products to someone's diet could kind of impact someone's recovery. So do you mind kind of explaining that a bit more?
Yeah, so it is super convoluted. And I guess there are kind of a lot of ifs and buts to this, because particularly with developing vegetarian and vegan kind of guidelines for treating, new evidence is kind of being brought up as we go on. So in terms of the reintroduction of meat, that is generally required for inpatient treatment. Maybe if you are kind of receiving outpatient treatment, that may be a little bit easier to work with your dietitian and your psychologist in terms of developing a meal plan that you can create at home. But generally speaking, the reintroduction of meat is generally required if you are at an inpatient stay.
Is that because of what you can get from meat, or is that sort of...
Generally just because it is a lot easier. Generally a lot easier. Also, in terms of being there with other people, you don't want to be seen to kind of giving special treatment to other patients as well. You don't want them to be saying, oh, well, I'm vegetarian too, or something like that. So it makes it a lot easier. And as kind of meals are being prepared. And we also know that literature does show that vegetarians and vegans are quite tied to their identity. So in terms of their vegetarian and vegan identity, that's quite something that is quite tied to their kind of sense of self. And we also know that they are more likely to feel kind of judged by what we can kind of consider the outgroup, so maybe meat eaters or omnivores. So being required to eat meat again does at times, or for some people, may feel like kind of a threat to their identity, the threat to who they are and their sense of self. So it is a matter of kind of untying, I guess, onset again. So when eating disorder and also the vegetarian and veganism began, motives as well, and then kind of their, I guess, flexibility around potential reintroduction of meat and animal products while they are in treatment. I also like to think of, you know, other ways in which that person can express their identity in other ways. If they are vegetarian or vegan for animal welfare, maybe they could be volunteer at an animal shelter or something like that, or they continue to implement the kind of lifestyle components of a vegetarian or vegan diet. Trying to exercise other things rather than eating. So those kind of lifestyle components to a vegetarian and vegan diet.
Before I go on to what I was just going to say, I don't know whether this is appropriate to say, but it almost kind of makes me think about the conversation I had with Iman a few weeks ago about Ramadan, in that the kind of, you know, practicing Ramadan, the whole point of that is that it's meant to be like a connection. I know that veganism and vegetarianism isn't a religion, but it's about, you know, connecting to yourself, connecting to others, connecting to your God and your religion. And actually, if that's impacting your health, you're, you know, that's not part of it, and that shouldn't be. And I think it's very similar with veganism, in that sort of, you know, if your the motivations behind it are generally, you know, improvements to health, improvements to lifestyle, improvements to the planet, and if you're, if it's negatively impacting you because it's not optimizing your health, then to me that doesn't really align with the vegan values, I don't think. Which is an interesting thing that I hadn't thought of before, and maybe others haven't, in that, you know, if it is meaning that your health is being affected, you know, maybe you do need to take a step back or reevaluate, because it isn't to be about like bettering health and the planet and stuff like that. But the other thing that I thought was interesting that you just mentioned was that the veganism, I think particularly, maybe less so than vegetarianism, but I do think vegetarianism is still part of someone's identity, is, you were saying how it's like such a big part of somebody's identity, and often they can kind of value themselves over that. And that was a really interesting concept, because as part of eating disorder recovery, you're trying to piece back your identity, and you're trying to get it back from just an eating disorder. And it almost made me think, is it okay for veganism to have such a core part of your identity? Because I, you know, there's the classic thing, isn't it, that like you walk into a room and you know within 2 seconds you're vegan because they mention it. And I'm like, is that okay for it to have, you know, for your eating practices to have such a big hold on you? Or is that my biased self coming from an eating disorder perspective, in that the way that you eat shouldn't have such a strong kind of element of your identity? And I just wondered about your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I guess I think about a lot about like intent, and also like where the cognitions are coming from for it to be a part of someone's identity. I think particularly vegans, more so than vegetarians, are kind of quite protective of veganism, because there are so kind of many jokes out there about being vegan and whatnot, so it is kind of something that they hold quite close to them, and they also do cop a lot of flack. I mean, as a vegan, I've copped a lot of flack and those annoying comments at family dinners and stuff like that. So yeah, it's a tricky question.
Yeah, and I guess it's almost, I guess it's evaluating what impact it's having on your life, like I was saying before. And if it is, you know, very restrictive and impacting you, but although I don't want to make it sound like I'm like shitting on veganism, because I'm not in the slightest, and I think it's brilliant. And yeah, I think, you know, from my personal perspective, I would like to be vegan one day, but I know right now that my intentions are not in the best place, and it would be a bomb for me if I'm being vegan, to being more restrictive. But I, you know, for so many people, it is something that is so kind of valuable and like dear to them. And one thing I always remember was, I had a friend. And then this is where, like, I always think about intentions when you're vegan, vegetarian. And she had anorexia, and she went vegan, and then she bought a leather handbag. And I was like, something's not quite adding up here for me. I don't think this is going the right way. But, yeah, I was wondering if you had any thoughts in terms of in treatment facilities of sort of, you know, navigating that with somebody and maybe trying to explore their intentions a bit more, because I feel like a lot of clinicians will be met with people that say, I'm vegan or I'm vegetarian. And from your kind of, you know, perspective of being vegan yourself and the work that you've done, if you had any tips for people to sort of have those conversations with patients to understand where their intentions are coming from.
Yeah, it's a tough one. It is a really tough one. I would say definite case by case. I would also, again, be wanting to look at kind of onset of eating disorder and the vegetarian and vegan diet motivations, you know, unpacking whether it's environmental sustainability concerns, animal welfare concerns. But I also think that those motivations should be kind of explored throughout treatment as well, because they may kind of change, or maybe insight throughout treatment may assist in kind of intertwining those motivations. But yeah, I guess a conversation needs to be had around the potential intertwining of their vegetarian and vegan diet into kind of those eating disorder cognitions and those thoughts, in terms of kind of tying back to that cognitive restraint and how their diet may be used as kind of like a smoke screen for their eating disorder behaviors. And then, you know, some people who might have been vegetarian or vegan for a really long time before the onset of the eating behaviors, that's kind of a little bit more clear cut. I definitely know of clinicians who will kind of be like, I'm pretty satisfied by that once explored, that they're not related. But yeah, a lot of unpacking, I guess, needs to happen in those first few sessions.
Yeah, I think you often can tell when where someone's intentions are coming from, especially after maybe like those deeper conversations. And I almost wonder if, and this maybe comes on to the other piece of work that you're doing in your PhD, but we need to have more sort of understanding and awareness around veganism and vegetarianism in order to make those sort of valid kind of decisions around it, in terms of, I don't know, I'm just thinking that if you had somebody that was vegan or vegetarian themselves, maybe they would understand the, I guess, complexities of being vegan and vegetarian, or maybe the kind of like thoughts that come along with it, in terms of the importance of it to somebody. Because as somebody that's maybe not vegan or vegetarian, asking somebody to eat meat, you know, like we were saying earlier, because it's going to promote your recovery, would seem like a really flippant and easy thing to do. But as somebody that's doesn't eat meat, you can appreciate, like, okay, one, you're being, you know, if we're talking about anorexia here, you're being asked to, well, I guess all eating disorders, you probably need to start increasing what you're eating, you know, more regularly. So one, you're being asked to eat on a more regular basis, but two, you're being asked to eat something that goes against all your beliefs.
Exactly.
So not only have you got the eating disorder in that your mind, like, you're like, this is really bad, you're doing this really bad, but then you've got like all the thoughts about being vegan, and that your those sort of like internal thoughts, and maybe thoughts from outsiders as well, in terms of like, oh, well, why do you have to start eating meat just to recover? Because you could do recovery as a vegan. So I can imagine that would make recovery incredibly difficult.
Yeah, I think as a vegan, I think there would be like a degree of like a traumatization as well, being asked and being asked to eat meat or animal products again. So yeah, it's a tough one. Yeah, but it's also, I guess, important to consider like the quantity of food, if it is, say, maybe an outpatient, in terms of if they are going ahead with the vegetarian or vegan diet, just the volume of food that is required, to like when refeeding. So, you know, those large amounts of, maybe if it's lentils or chickpeas or whatever it may be, if you are eating kind of a tin of those, they may make you feel a bit sluggish, and you may be having to eat super large quantities, which in itself may be really hard. So it is kind of balancing that, or becoming, you know, a good friend with more of those mock meats and those kind of heavier calorie dense probably going to process plant-based foods.
Yeah, and one thing that actually that's just brought to my mind is when I first started having like the corn, do you guys have corn?
Yes, we do.
Yeah, like the corn mints, particularly, you have to have like so much more of that compared to mints because of the fat content in order to get the same amount of calories, the same amount of nutrients that you need from it. And that to me was quite a shock when I first started having it. And I think it would be very easy to have, you know, if let's say your family aren't vegetarian and you're cooking your own food, it would be very easy to mask, oh, I'm actually, you know, eating a lot less, but the portion sizes look the same. And another thing in terms of maybe you're not having the mock meats, but you're having lentils and things like that. I personally can't have lentils because it makes my IBS so bad. And IBS is obviously something that when you've engaged in restrictive diets can be something very common. And a lot of the, you know, whether it's lentils, pulses, beans, things like that, they've got a lot of fiber in them. And then I think that as a, you know, personal anecdote, I found having those meals and like you said, in the larger quantities that you need, that then kind of messes with my head and body dysmorphia and things like that, because I feel so much larger, so much more full. So that's actually, that's not something I thought of, but that's a really important consideration in terms of the psychological aspects of the food that you're eating and how that makes you feel. But then equally, I can appreciate that if I had to start eating meat, that would also make me feel not very nice. And internally, so it's a hard one, isn't it?
It's super convoluted, super convoluted.
So I wanted to speak to you a little bit about the other piece of work that you're doing within your PhD. So I think you were talking about like eating disorder measures and questionnaires and how, you know, it's particularly the EDEQ, how that maybe at the moment is not really asking the right questions, or the answers could be taken in a kind of it not the right way when you're thinking about vegan and vegetarian diets.
Yeah. Well, if we go back to cognitive restraint that I kind of talked about before, and we know that that cognitive restraint is a large part of being vegetarian or vegan, kind of just naturally due to the nature of the diet. And it's also a big part of an eating disorder. And it's also generally questions that are included in eating disorder screeners or eating disorder instrument. There's questions in there. Do you exclude large portions of food from your diet, or do you regularly exclude different food groups, or do you restrict different food groups? There's also questions in there that ask about like external people's views in terms of your eating. Like the EDEQ has one about, maybe it's not the EDEQ. There are questions in there about, does your family think you're eating enough? Or do you get comments from your family members about what you're eating? And I think many vegetarians and vegans would probably say yes if they haven't got a vegan or vegetarian family. I know personally I get the odd comment again about, oh, I don't know, do you want meat on your plate or whatever it may be? So kind of those types of comments that may be kind of construed, or people may think that those eating disorder instruments may be picking up on, in addition to those cognitive restraint questions as well. So we did look at a number of eating disorder questionnaires in terms of the validity and reliability of these scales in separate groups of vegetarians and vegans. And we found that while they did kind of have mixed support for their use, the kind of theoretical assumptions or the theories that make up these instruments weren't able to be applied to vegetarian and vegan groups. So that's kind of where the final phase of my PhD research does come in, where I am developing and validating a novel eating disorder screener tool for vegetarian and vegan groups. So super exciting work. It is taken a few years now. So it kind of was developed in four phases. So it using both kind of qualitative and quantitative research, so a lot of interviews with people with the eating disorder experience, clinicians, so dietitians and psychologists, and then a range of kind of dietary adherences, so people who are all throughout the meat avoidance spectrum and also omnivores. And that's how I've kind of developed this screener, using multiple different faces that I've kind of dipped into throughout the way. In terms of what the screener looks like, we have kind of the usual like questionnaires that kind of can be questions that can be rated along kind of like a rating system. But we've also included, which is really interesting, a number of items or questions within the screener that kind of are like respondent characteristic questions. This is kind of what we're going with. So we do look at identity. So we kind of get respondents to rate with agreement in terms of how closely they feel their diet is a part of their identity. And I'll start by saying that these questions don't necessarily in and of themselves highlight any eating pathology, but with the rest of the screener, these questions give really, really good insight into if someone was scoring highly on the rest of the screener. So if someone was kind of having a red flag for eating disorder pathology and they were ticking that their vegetarian or vegan diet was a large part of their identity, it does give treating clinicians kind of a good place to start, like a good kind of background to start. There's also a few other questions in there about like willingness or flexibility around the potential reintroduction of meat if it was necessary for survival. We've found that vegans are kind of scoring a little bit on the higher side of these questions. So most vegans are saying no to this question. If it was required for their survival, they wouldn't reintroduce meat. So it does give really good kind of background information into what the general vegetarian or vegan is rating and what this person is rating, if then accompanied by high scores on the screener.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting, and that is always a question that comes up in terms of, it's always from me teachers of like, oh well, you know, if that was the only option you had, would you eat it? So I thought,
kind of deserted island.
Yeah, come on. Like, I'm sure you do like some rogue things if you're on a deserted island. Oh, you can't be that much of a vegan then. It's like, okay, cool, whatever. Like, you just enjoy your chicken. But I think that's really great that you have not just kind of devised a questionnaire that's like, would you eat this? Would you eat that? Would you eat this? But almost looking at the intentions behind it. And that I think will be so useful, particularly in clinical settings where you do see a high proportion of people presenting as vegan and vegetarian, to really understand what's going on behind that action and those eating behaviours. And I'm sure that will help, you know, so many people. And it's interesting what you say about the current questionnaires, because I think in general the current questionnaires need adapting anyway, because they're very specific to particular behaviours. So that's really interesting. So is this going to be like a one kind of almost like an EDEQ that you then kind of roll out, and is it just like a one-off questionnaire, or did you say that it's going to be something that's like regularly checked throughout treatment?
Yeah, it's designed at this stage as a screener, so we'd love for it to be implemented into kind of primary healthcare settings as kind of initial screening, particularly with the addition of those pre-screening questionnaire or those item characteristic questions that we've got in there. They provide a really good kind of first glance for treatment to kind of progress from there. So some good insights there.
Yeah, that's a really good idea. And then have you kind of done anything in terms of, I guess what's the outcome of the questionnaire going to be? Like, is it like a yes, they're a true vegan, no, they're doing it because of their eating disorder? Or like, what's the outcome of that
Yeah, it definitely doesn't unpack that much. I would love for it to kind of give all the answers.
Like 100% vegan, but just
Fake, no, not a fake vegan. No, I wouldn't say that. But
vegan.
yeah, it definitely doesn't. It I the question, it doesn't use vegetarian or vegan within the actual items. I talk about your diet or the way you eat. So it doesn't actually kind of, I didn't want it to potentially bias people that it's targeted towards their diet. So I've tried to be quite neutral in the wording that I've used. I would hope that it would give kind of treating clinicians a little bit more clarity in terms of where that person's headspace is at, in terms of how their vegetarian or vegan diet is kind of fulfilling them. And then there's also kind of the eating disorder pathology part of the screener.
I love that you haven't sort of used that terminology in like the vegan and vegetarian, because I think, like we were saying earlier, it's such a big part of your identity. And actually being a bit more open about that, of in terms of like the foods that you eat or like the diet that you have and stuff like that. It's, I imagine if somebody said, are you vegan, yes or no? Like that's a very clear cut thing, and you're going to want to say yes. Whereas if it's like, how do you approach this kind of food or whatever, it's much more open-minded, and people maybe will be a bit more honest with it, or it just kind of gives that bigger picture of somebody's eating practices rather than, yes, I'm vegan, no, I don't eat meat, like very like basic kind of questions along there.
Exactly. We hope that, as I may have mentioned at the start, kind of vegan and vegetarian eating disorder research is just so new. Like it is absolutely in its infancy stage. There's really not a lot out there, and what there is out there is predominantly cross-sectional, and most of it's correlational as well. So there's not really a great deal amount of high quality research out there looking at vegetarian, vegan in eating disorders. With this screener, we can then look at prevalence. There's a lot of kind of estimates of eating disorder prevalence throughout the vegetarian and vegan community, but we know that these eating disorder tools that we're currently using may not be appropriate for these groups. So, being able to estimate eating disorder prevalence in these groups would be a really exciting next step. And also looking at guidelines as well. There's no treating guidelines for these groups. I think the UK has a consensus statement. I think the Royal College of Psychiatrists has a consensus statement, and that's pretty much all that's out there. In terms
What do
of
you mean by a consensus statement, sorry?
it is about, I think it's like a 4 or 5 page document, kind of just laying the land of the relationship. There's no kind of general treatment guidelines for these groups.
Which in a way obviously is not great for people that are currently going through that, because there's no like specific guidelines, but in a way that it makes me kind of optimistic when things are not currently set in stone, because I think we're going through a really exciting stage in the moment at the moment with eating disorders, where we're kind of understanding that everything's so individualized. And I think you just have to look at sort of things like the DSM-5, and they're very kind of, you have this diagnosis, so therefore you're in this bucket and we're going to treat you with this. But actually, from my kind of personal experience and doing this podcast, you'll speak to somebody that's been diagnosed with anorexia, but then they have tendencies of orthorexia, or they're binge eating and stuff like that. And it to me feels like we're very sort of, like an eating disorder, we're very rigid and like very inflexible with those diagnoses. But actually, when kind of there is no guidelines, for things like supporting someone with an eating disorder with vegan and who's vegan or vegetarian. It's like, well, that's actually kind of exciting because we are realizing that it all needs to be individual. And, you know, like with your questionnaire in terms of determining where someone's at with their relationship with food and how they can be supported rather than just, okay, you're vegan, so you get this meal plan and, you know, actually you can't be vegan, you've got to eat meat. It's about exploring the individual. So, yeah. Trying to be optimistic, but that to me is quite exciting.
Definitely. I think the future of vegetarian and vegan eating disorder research is super exciting because there's just so much that can be done in the field, because kind of starting from scratch over here, we're doing the basics. Even like some longitudinal stuff would be really awesome. As I said, it's all cross-sectional. There's only one retrospective chart review study, but otherwise that's as detailed as it gets.
So what would be your sort of like hope and dream for the research that you're doing? What's kind of like, because you said you're coming to the end of the future, what's your like next step or your dream?
I mean, prevalence rates would be an awesome one, because I really think that would give everyone a good kind of idea of what we're actually looking at, rather than just kind of all these estimates that are online. And then some longitudinal stuff would be really awesome, looking at I guess how people's attitudes towards veganism kind of dips and waves over time if they are vegetarian, and also flexibility and rigidity in terms of within their diet as well would be really awesome to explore, in terms of how kind of that rigid side within the realms of a vegetarian diet can maybe play with eating pathology.
I think that would be interesting. I think something I was thinking of as well is like treatment outcomes, in terms of like comparing it from meat eaters to non-meat eaters, to kind of see the impact maybe that has. And then also, if you're like, I don't know if this would be possible, because I feel like this would be unethical actually now I'm saying it, but like people that are vegan, vegetarian, that have to eat meat as part of their recovery compared to people that don't, like to think about the treatment outcomes there, but then 50% of the people would have to be forced to eat meat. So
yeah, even some qualitative stuff around there would be really, really great. Kind of anecdotally exploring people's attitudes to that now that they are maybe in recovery, and
maybe retrospectively, so you don't have to be the one to force them. Courtney, that's been so good to chat to you. I think that was a really interesting exploration, because I think when I first heard about your PhD, I was just like, well, I don't think anyone should be vegan or vegetarian when they're in recovery. And it's like, what are you doing? And actually, it was really interesting to explore with you, like, why? Or like, you know, the reasons why somebody obviously would still want to engage in their practices during their recovery, and that it, you know, with the right support, which hopefully with your screening tools and then more awareness in treatment facilities, I think, you know, it is something that's possible. Where can people find out more about you and follow the research that you're doing?
Yeah, definitely jump on my Twitter. That's where I post and update all of my research and my studies and kind of my journey, my PhD journey on there. So definitely jump on to my Twitter and follow along on there.
Well, thank you so much, Courtney. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I've had a blast.
If you enjoyed listening today, you won't want to miss next week's episode, so be sure to subscribe. Eating disorders are crippling illnesses, but with the right support, they can be recovered from. We really hope you enjoyed this episode, but if you require more support right now, please look into charities such as First Steps and Beat for support, or talk to someone you trust.